everyone. Thank you so much for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. I believe that Ophelia says in Hamlet, there we know who we are, but not who we will be. Goodness, I can't speak this today. And I believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. I can't imagine that that is easy, but then it isn't finished struggling. It has to fight in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly once it gets out of the cocoon. And while we may want to help it out of the cocoon, we'd actually be doing it a disservice if we did that. And I believe it's the same way with our people who have a disability and they struggle. We need to support them, we need to facilitate them, not enable them. And I'm really happy today to bring to you Priya Tronsgaard, I hope I said the last name right, from Edify Learning Spaces in Canada. And she's going to share with us her journey, her children's journey, and why she started Edify Learning Spaces and what it does for her clients. So, Priya, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm really pleased to hear the analogy about the butterfly, because they do know more than us in many, many ways. Thank you for this opportunity. And I am joining you from unceded territory here in Canada. And it's a joy to be here. So what I want to talk about is a lot of families that I work with, but it all starts with me when I was growing up. I grew up here in Canada. And, you know, it was a long time ago. And I think when we're talking about neurodiversity and we're thinking about differences, people kind of take the most obvious difference and think that that's it. So the most obvious difference was that I am a person of color and a girl, right? So those were the main things that people kind of looked at, and they didn't see the inattentive ADHD, which is very common for girls. And yeah, I was lucky enough to see my own failures and continue to be supported with people in the community who saw my potential. So the basic part of my story actually started after I found out about my kids. So that journey, which maybe a lot of parents have that in common, they see similarities in their children and they say, well, I struggled with that too. And they then look back with that lens and it changes the way you see things. So it worked in that way for me as well. But here on the West Coast of Canada, I had the support of a community leader who put me in more leadership opportunities. And the program that they're running is still available today. And it's all about leadership and putting youth in leadership opportunities. And I took that learning and it's still with me today. And I'm so thankful that there's people in the community who believed in me and what I'm capable of, because there were times and I don't think we use grades anymore the same way, but I was failing in all sense, in every sense, grade names, numbers, percentages. I was doing very poorly from those standards. And it just didn't make sense to me, because after class, people would say, well, what did the teacher say? You always seem to remember everything. So when it would come to tests, I would not understand the way the question was written and think it was a trick, or I wouldn't really understand the answer that they would look for. So that took a lot of time. But going back, I think that I started tutoring. That was my first leadership opportunity. So I started helping other kids who were maybe 5-6 years younger than me because of this community leader who believed in me and gave me weekend tutoring opportunities with the community center. And I started to see how some kids learn, and I became very interested in that. And that was part of my education journey. And, you know, went to get a psych degree from this university here, UBC and took that with me to my next education journey overseas in Japan. So I worked with the Tokyo Board of Education there and saw how they were structuring their education and took all of those key information on how they work with students there and how little support they get. But they have after-school opportunities. And from 3:30 till 8 o'clock, they are really getting one-on-one support. It's different. Yeah. And it's long. It's different. And we don't have a system similar to that in Canada at all. So it was interesting to see how that works. And then I came back and, you know, saw some unique differences in my own kids. And they're still in elementary school, so they are both under the age of 12. And our system here encourages, or at the time, encouraged getting assessed early and finding out the specifics, you know, psychoeducational profiles. So I found out about my first child and their learning differences and found out that there was not a lot of information on learning outcomes and possibilities. In the, you know, the report that we got from the psych ed department of this hospital, there were a lot of, I guess, iterations of things that could go wrong in this report. And that was shocking to me as a person who was first seeing something that was of this nature for my own child, and seeing the worst case scenarios and not seeing the best case scenarios really made me feel like I was, you know, on an iceberg, and I was hopping from one iceberg to the other, and they were all melting. I had no idea where to stand. And I'm in a different person now, and I know that I'm not on ice, and I have firm ground to stand on, and there's solutions, and there's different ways to approach problems or differences, right? So sometimes it's all in the framing of the language, which I'm still getting better at. But at the time, you know, it was very scary to see the outcomes, which was the main point. So you better get this specific type of, you know, help. And if you don't, it could lead to this, you know, horrible scenario. And nothing else, like nothing about all the possibilities and all the wonderful people that have had the same types of neurodiversities and have done really well with the right support. There was nothing like that on that report. And I feel now I run a program where I match the right type of support people to families who have kids who are neurodivergent and help them focus on three things, which is finding their own strengths, acknowledging that they're going through some difficulty, acknowledging it and using language like, I see that this is frustrating. And also using growth mindset. So really focusing in on failure being a good way to learn and not it being you yourself are a failure. And so that takes a lot of time. We work with families one-on-one, and a lot of the people that are supporting these kids have kids of their own who are like that, or they have at least 3 to 5 years of experience in local classrooms. And so our culture fit is pretty good. But the families that I work with, it's usually a very stressed out parent. I'm usually the mom. And it looks like she's been hit by a truck. It really looks like she's tried everything. She's gone to every professional and she still does not know how to build that connection with her own child. So, you know, seeing that and knowing that there's so many ways that we can help families, and seeing them 6 months later in a relaxed state is one of the reasons why I do what I do. I just know that in a couple of months from now, they are going to say, you know, it's all worked out. And now they're doing this and they're building their own curriculum and it's all going well. And I know that that's in their future, but I can see myself in them, in their eyes and their demeanor and their energy. I can absolutely empathize with where they're at.
Yeah, I'm sure. Wow. Thank you for all of that. There's a few things that, well, probably a lot more than a few, but there's a few things that I want to just pull out and talk about a little bit more. So one of the things that you said is, you know, having that growth mindset and acknowledging that there's a difference about the child and that, you know, they can still, that failure isn't the end all to be all, you know, that we can learn from our failures. So I haven't had an opportunity to read your book, but are those the three things? And I do want to share that. I do have it up on Amazon that we can look at it. I just got to pull up the right screen here. So Radically Reframe, Three Guiding Principles for a Happier Neurodivergent Family. And so I see that it's available here on Amazon. So before we go too much further, is it available anywhere else?
It's just available on Amazon.
Okay. That's perfect. That's fine. I just wanted to see.
Yes.
Yeah. If there was any place else, I was going to, you know, make sure that people, so go to Amazon. And are those the principles or are they slightly different?
Those are the principles, but there's one at the end. So the final principle is gratitude. And the gratitude piece has some scientific components to it, which is that, you know, we see our kids and then we want to help them. And we go to a provider that is now pointing out all the things that they are not doing well. And that because we have now opened up those things to spotlight, we are forgetting about our child and how they're growing and what wonderful things they're doing because they're not ticking off the boxes that someone else has now made us more aware of, hyper aware of even. Oh, okay, well, you're not playing with other kids, so parallel play is not good. So you've got to do this. And so you're kind of putting this energy into this moment. And the gratitude piece is talking about really how we can start building pathways in our brain to practice positivity. And that will help our kids and ourselves as well. They say it lowers high blood pressure, lowers depression, and it helps people be part of a community, which is also helpful when you have a neurodivergent kid. And I think what you're doing is helping others. But there is a sense in the beginning that nobody else knows how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I'm here and I'm alone and I have a phone and I have judgy people outside and or even inside my own home, you know. And I think the gratitude piece helps us get back outside one step at a time and connect with others and reach out and show that gratitude and build a community with people who really will help us move forward and keep that, all those good things going, you know?
Yeah. And I have found that statement of, I feel all alone in so many families that have been on this show, or that I'm a former special education teacher here in the United States. And so some of the families that I worked with, you know, they would say that, or families that are related to me. And I thought, how do I know all of these people, but yet almost all of them feel alone? Yeah. And, you know, some of them are literally very proximally close to one another, yet they still feel alone. And that is kind of one of the ideas for this. And I'm glad that that is evident to outsiders, that I am trying to make it seem like it isn't so unusual, because it isn't. And, you know, we have in our school system here in the United States, I think it's close to 7 million or maybe a little bit more students now that are found eligible for special education. So if we have 7 million students, we have at least 7 million parents and probably, you know, 14 million that are out there that are, you know, needing to be seen. And I really, and I'm not a parent of a child with a disability, but I really feel that that's what it is that they don't feel seen. Because as you said, you get these, maybe these diagnoses or you get these eligibilities and you think there's nobody else. Maybe there's somebody else who has a child who has this diagnosis that I know, but their walk is so different than mine that I'm all by myself. And so hopefully, you know, also I am an author and my book, Those Who Can't Teach, is true stories of families to promote empathy, acceptance, and inclusion, to try to, again, enlighten people and bring people together, because it's a horrible feeling to feel all alone.
It really is. And it can cause a lot of people to, in a way, harm their or reduce their opportunities to be where they need to be, mm-hmm. right? And so they don't want to be there. They don't want to be in between a rock and a hard place. But how are they going to reach out to others when they feel pushed into a corner? So really, you know, I think talking about it more and spreading the openness of our language and what we're talking about and how all these kids and families are accepted for who they are so they don't have to mask and cause themselves more anxiety and stress and depression. You know, that's the goal, is really to help open that up and have this conversation. There's so much around the shame and stigma, and even with professionals that are meant to help, it seems surprising that a lot of them are doing things the way they used to. And there's so much knowledge we still all have to learn. So I think it's a continuous journey that sometimes you turn in one direction and you think, oh, they're going to help me. And maybe they have said something that, you know, doesn't align with your values. And now you're back to where you started, step one. So a lot of the growth mindset is for us as well.
Right. I was going to comment that. I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, oftentimes we do, when we mention growth mindset, we think children, we think students, but it absolutely is for the adults as well. And that's also ties into the butterfly and the caterpillar, because none of us are who we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20, and in some of our cases, 30 or 40 years ago. And, you know, to stifle, that's why this is called hashtag no limits, because to stifle someone's potential, especially when they're 5 years old or 8 years old or 10 years old, and say, oh, this person is never, you know, and I don't mean that people are walking around necessarily orally stating these thoughts, but that they have the thoughts, and then that thought directs the expectations that some teachers have or some doctors have or society has when they see a person. And so, again, trying to change that perspective and get everyone, or at least more people, to understand we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And that can go in reverse. You know, normally I'm thinking growth like, you know, things get better. But every one of us is just an accident away from becoming a person who is disabled.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the more that we help everybody, like once we're inclusive, it's better for everybody. It's just, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And that can work when we're talking about economy. It can work when we're talking about inclusion and diversity. So it's not just the other or them that's going to benefit. It's all of us. And I think once we can kind of share that idea that it's not us versus them, it's all of us, that maybe if we come to it and we keep working on that message, that maybe others who are not there yet are going to be part of that message as well, that we're all going to benefit. So, you know, that's part of the goal is really to help even people who don't know yet, right? Because it's so much energy. Whereas the actually autistic community, they refer to it as having spoons, like having the spoons to explain to everyone else what they're going through and how difficult it is on a daily basis can be exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I can only fathom what that is like, because I have very little knowledge of being, and now I myself have struggled with anxiety over the years. And so, you know, getting people to understand that anxiety is not just twirling somebody's hair, or that it's just something that I can manipulate in a time or not in another time, you know, and that's tiring. So, you know, having to do that every day, all day, no matter where you are, whether you're in the education field, in the, you know, if you're a student or a parent, whether you're in the medical arena, whether you're at a work situation, a church situation, your neighbors, I mean, it's just everywhere, all the time. One of the parents actually in my book said that, you know, when a parent is given the diagnosis for their child, that's an every minute, every second of the rest of that child's life. It's not just you have pneumonia, it's going to get better and you'll be okay in a few months. You're now a caregiver for every second of every day until you pass or the child passes. And I don't think that we that don't have that experience can really grasp the enormity of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. You know, you want to move your child towards independence because you can't live forever. And you think about, you know, how you're going to leave them and what that looks like. And if an accident happens, you know, what would that look like? And I had dealt with that myself. Like my mom passed away when I was very young, and things were not in place for me because we didn't have a diagnosis. So I'm quite aware of, you know, what a good plan looks like, even if I'm here or not. And so there's these, I think the Copeland Center has like the WRAP plan. So that's the Wellness Recovery Action Plan. It was originally used for people recovering, but now they use it in all different types of settings. And so in the Wellness Recovery Action Plan, there are places where if you are not doing well in that plan, you hand that plan over to somebody else who's part of your team to take care of you. And so that is kind of a way for me to mitigate some of the anxiety of like, if I'm not here, well, this plan, it's constantly being updated, and there's people who are part of the team. How can we make this work in terms of insurance? And in Canada, insurance is a bit different, but how can we make this work in terms of health and how they're going to be supported with our team, and also financially, what that could look like. So all of that would be popped into that plan. And if parts of the plan are not working, then there's a team member, a few team members who would have a copy of that being updated. And so those types of things, which wouldn't it be great to just die like a regular person? I know that sounds morbid, but you know, there's a lot of pieces that go into making sure that our children are going to succeed, whether we're here or not. And there are things that we can do. So part of that is in the book, and not too intense, pretty much what I just said, but there are plans that you can put into place to make sure that the best outcomes are possible. But yeah, those are things that, you know, they they weigh heavy. But what I try to do for me personally is put that anxiety into motion. And I'm not saying it doesn't, it's going to go away and everything's going to be perfect. I'm just putting it into motion and trying to see if there's a solution. And if I'm wrong, well, I'm wrong, but at least I tried and, you know, have people on the team, you know, to support. And I thought that far ahead. So, you know, I think there's different things that we have to think about, but, you know, in the past we didn't even have insurance and we didn't have succession plans and we didn't have all of these types of things. So it just takes, you know, a movement and I guess a vision that it is possible to be done. And that attitude, that just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean it's not good. There are so many things that we can do that think, well, it doesn't exist. So maybe I don't want to, you know, be the first person to do this on my own. And it's, if you have the right support in your life, then you can focus on one or two things that really can help your family and others and really make a difference, even if no one's done the exact same thing before.
Right, exactly. And that's another blessing that I've received from doing Hashtag No Limits is that I have gotten to see so many out of the box thinkers that I have even more hope than I had when I started Hashtag No Limits, because I've seen parents, and that's usually the ones that drive these changes, because a parent has a child and they see that their child has potential, but there isn't something that will support that potential. So they develop it, or they work with someone to develop it, or they figure, you know, whatever it is. And that's been a great joy, is to see all these different avenues that are possible now. So that just solidifies even more my belief in the hashtag no limits, because we truly don't know what kind of technological advances there are going to be, what kind of scientific breakthroughs, what kind of medical advances, what kind of miracles could happen. And to really, you know, just say, oh, well, this is as far as that person's ever going to go, or they're not going to be able to do this or that thing. You don't know that. And it's really that mindset. And we talked a little bit about that, you know, that if you have that growth mindset or not, and I don't want to say anything's possible, but that a lot of things are more possible than what a lot of people believe. And it really does, it just changes our whole brain and how we approach situations. I was just thinking about that today, that, you know, if we looked at every single student as, and I always view things from the teacher-student lens because that's been such a big part of my life. If we would just look at every student in our classroom, every student that we see, even if they're not our student, as a caterpillar that's going to turn into the butterfly with the right supports, that we would approach every student differently. I think so many people just see caterpillars and they never see the potential for a butterfly.
That's right. And I think, you know, a UN report recently said that 70% of teachers globally don't feel supported when it comes to working with neurodivergent kids. And there's no blame on the teacher at all. I think that they, if only they had the right support, that we know where things could end up and how butterflies could fly independently with a lot of strength and do what they are meant to do. But, you know, a lot of it comes from knowing who to support. And it's so sad that it falls like within the realm of a system that doesn't allow for that one-on-one connection, because that would cost more, right? So I understand that there's limitations, but I don't, like we're talking about in that vein, I don't think those limitations can stop this transformation. I think that it's a groundswell. I think there's more and more people that know about the term neurodivergent, and more people are looking back at their own lives and saying, you know, that reminds me of myself, and not seeing it as a negative. So I think I'm hopeful that we're at the precipice of something that is ready to tip in our direction.
Yes, me too. Well, Priya, I know that you have other events coming up today, and our time is drawing to a quick close here. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we've covered your book. And how people get that, they can go to Amazon to get that. I didn't get a chance to share your business, Edify Learning Spaces. So let me grab that website really quickly. And if you'll just talk to that just for a minute or two, and then we'll have to say our goodbyes.
Yeah, so even though we are Canada's leading tutoring agency for neurodivergent kids, we work with kids all over the world, from the States to Singapore. So, Yeah. We call you the States, by the way.
Well, that's what we are.
Yeah. But so we basically find the right tutor who has the best neuroaffirmative ideas and philosophies, and we match them up to families all across the globe. Some are in person, but most of them are online. And we work specifically with kids in grades two or the second grade to grade 12 or the 12th grade. And we work with, and it's just wonderful. We have helped so many families, and you know, we're always able to help more. And I'm always looking for tutors who have the experience as well, and have those neuroaffirmative practices, and really can see that butterfly before they're ready, because I think it's about that vision. And it's been a wonderful journey, helping so many families and getting to use all of those things that I learned with my own kids and myself. And it's just been a complete joy. And I count all my blessings for the gratitude that I have with me being able to help families and also myself.
That's fantastic. I just think that's a beautiful approach. And so the website itself is www.edifylearningspaces. So edifylearningspaces.com. I want them to make sure to get the spaces on there. Yeah. I don't know if it would direct if they did.
It does. They could just go on Google and write Edify Tutor Neurodivergent and it will show up.
Perfect. I'm not sure what I typed in, but it came up very quickly when I looked for it earlier. So, well, Priya, again, thank you so much for being my guest today. I know you have other things you have to get to today. I so appreciate your time and telling your story to all of my listeners. And thank you, Fran, for joining us today. And anybody else who watches this in the replay, gosh, I'm having trouble speaking today. Please be sure to let me know, #replay. And if you have any questions for Priya or you have any questions for me, put them in the chat and I will make sure that Priya gets them. I will see you all next week. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, shellykeno.w.